This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and hello to all you ain'ts. That's ain'ts versus saints. More about that in a minute.
I'm Dan Barker. I'm your friendly neighborhood ain't. Ain't as in there ain't no God. This is the August 17th, 2013 broadcast of Free Thought Radio. This show broadcasts from Madison, Wisconsin, And then on other stations around the country, we broadcast as well, including stations in California, Missouri, New York, Texas, and Michigan. And of course, hello to all of you podcast listeners.
Free Thought Radio is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we work to keep religion out of government where it doesn't belong. And we work to promote the views of those of us who are personally free from religion. And I just got back from the Twin Cities to a regional conference Minnesota Atheists put on. And as a perk, the day before the conference, they took us to a ball game, Dan. And you know I'm not big on sports. This was a baseball game. The St. Paul Saints. But I wouldn't have missed this one for the world. It was very entertaining. Minnesota Atheists sponsored the game for that day. And they were given the right to temporarily rename the team from the Saints to the Aints. So it was very cute. And they had...
The Mr. Paul Aints.
They called right. It the Mr. Paul or Ms. Paul Aints instead of the St. Paul Saints. And they had t-shirts and caps, and we filled one set of bleachers. It was really cute. It was really fun. It was a good way to mainstream freethinkers. And there was a lot of talk about atheism and during the game, little skits and things like that.
A lot
that.
Of national news about it, too. Did they win the game?
They did not have a prayer.
But they had a fun time. Today, we're going to talk with journalist Susan Jacoby about her new book, The Great Agnostic, Robert Ingersoll and American Freethought.
We spoke with Susan last year while she was working on her bio, but the book is out now, and we're looking forward to learning more about the famous 19th century orator known as the great agnostic Robert Greene Ingersoll.
Last week, as we mentioned, August the 11th was Ingersoll's birthday. Born in 1833, and speaking of more free thought history, this week, August 22nd, is the birthday of the composer Claude Debussy, born in France in 1862. Debussy rejected religion. He said, "I have made mysterious nature my religion. To feel the supreme and moving beauty of the spectacle to which nature invites her ephemeral guests, that is what I call prayer." Listen for some of Debussy's Rhapsody for Saxophone during today's show.
And August 19th is the birthday of... you can guess, Gene Roddenberry, creator of Star Trek, who was born in 1921. Gene Roddenberry was, of course, a freethinker, and he told FFRF lifetime member and co-writer Susan Sackett, "I've always been reasonably leery of religion because there are so many edicts in religion. Thou shalt not, or thou shalt. I wanted my world of the future to be clear of that."
And Free Thought Radio boldly goes where no show has gone before. You can learn more about freethinkers of today and yesterday and the day before yesterday at FFRF's Free Thought of the Day. Go to fffrf.org/news/day.
Do we have time for a joke?
We do have a joke. A listener from Oregon, Tamara Russo, sent us this one. A woman returned home from an evening church service, and she was startled to find an intruder robbing her house. And so she yelled, "Stop! Acts 2:38, repent and be baptized in the name of Jesus." So the burglar froze. The woman calmly called the police, and then she explained what she had done. And when the officer was handcuffing the burglar, he asked him, "Why did you freeze when she quoted a Bible verse to you?" Bible verse, he said. When she said Acts 2:38, I thought she had an axe and 2:38s.
All right, that's cute. So,
well, maybe religion does have some good use in private life, but the biggest problem with religion comes when it gets mixed with government.
Now, speaking of that, our busy legal staff and interns have gotten out a lot of complaints this summer, and we just got word of a major victory. Our intake attorney, Liz Cavell, has stopped graduation prayer at LSU. That's in Baton Rouge, Louisiana State University. That's a major victory. She wrote a letter this summer after a priest opened and closed the secular graduation ceremony. So congratulations, Liz. And last month, Liz sent a letter to the League City, Texas City Council, where they've been opening city council meetings with Christian prayer for more than 5 decades. And the right-wing Liberty Council has gotten involved, telling them to ignore our complaint. And this is part of a story from KPRC in Houston.
League City residents passionate about prayer, and they're upset someone is trying to take that away from them. After all, it's the way League City Council meetings have started for decades.
Lord, come now, lifting the leaders of this city up to you, Lord.
The invocation has a place on the agenda right next to the Pledge of Allegiance, and the people here plan to keep it that way.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with League City continuing a practice that it started in 1962.
Jeff Mateer is a lawyer with the Liberty Institute. He and his team came from Dallas after they heard about a letter sent to the city's mayor demanding they stop praying at their meetings. The letter came from the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the same group that challenged the Coons cheerleaders last year. Tonight, the city council voted to allow the Liberty Institute lawyers to put a prayer policy in writing. Mayor Tim Paulison says most people he's heard from are on the city's side.
I'd say out of the 100 or better emails I've had, I've only had one that was negative.
Now, the Liberty Institute lawyers say they are quite familiar with the Freedom From Religion Foundation because they send out about 1,000 letters every year to cities all across America asking them to stop public prayer. We're live in League City tonight. Jennifer Bauer, KPRC, Local 2.
I was at the office that evening that story ran in Houston, and our phone rang, and I picked it up, and some really angry guy from Texas called up and says, "What are you doing trying to sue the city of League City? Don't you know, don't mess with Texas?" And then going on and on and on. I just calmly listened, and then he said, "Well, aren't you going to answer my question? How come you're so silent? You have the guts to sue." Well, he didn't use the word guts. He used another word, but he said, "You have the guts to sue our city, but you don't have the guts to respond to my question." And I said, "What is your name?" And he hung up.
Of course, we're not suing the city, but so who's the coward? And speaking of government prayer, that's how FFRF got our start here in Madison, Wisconsin, complaining and stopping prayer before the city council. And there's a case before the Supreme Court we'll be talking about more as the year goes on, where the city of Greece, Texas has appealed.
New York
has appealed a victory on behalf against government prayer, where they've been conducting only Christian prayer. And what a disappointment this week to see the White House side with congressional Republicans and theocrats in this upcoming Supreme Court case over opening town councils almost exclusively with Christian prayer. And they just submitted an amicus brief on behalf of the town and the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is not a pro-freedom group. It's an anti-abortion, anti-gay, pro-theocracy group. And the high court will be acting on this. And we've also seen this means the White House is siding with 85 House members, only one of whom isn't a Republican. Ditto 34 senators, only one of whom isn't a Republican, agitating on behalf of Christian prayer by city councils. And also a bunch of almost half of the attorneys general around the country, thankfully not in Wisconsin. So very disappointing. And prayer in government truly is running amok. Late last week, what happened there, Dan?
Well, late last week, the Alabama Governor Robert Bentley chimed in to publicly condemn our group, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, for our work to stop, and we talked about this on an earlier show, the third annual prayer caravan, which was organized by the Coleman County, Alabama superintendent, Billy Coleman. That's where the Christians visit each of the schools, and they have this prayer thing through the whole county.
But they're organized by the superintendent. And so we sent out our letter of complaint, and then they just took the information off the website to hide it. And then after that, we've heard from 7 families in the county objecting to other violations in the schools, and we wrote letters on that. And on August 6th, the superintendent, Coleman, held a press conference defending his actions.
If those authorities determined that acting in my capacity as superintendent of education, I made a mistake, then I accept the full consequences. Nevertheless, I do not recognize a private organization from Wisconsin as one of those authorities to which I am subject. I have the right to organize private events in my private capacity as a citizen of Coleman County, and to have announcements posted, even about religious events, on the announcement section of the district's website.
Well, of course, he organized it as superintendent and had it on their website. And then after that press conference, what is most shocking is that the Alabama governor, Robert Bentley, weighed in favor of the superintendent Coleman's actions, mixing religion and government, or mixing religion and schools. And here's a story out of Huntsville, WAFF.
Governor Bentley is weighing in on the prayer caravan set for this Saturday in Coleman County. The Freedom from Religion Foundation says the event would violate the separation between church and state.
Governor Bentley says he supports the Coleman County superintendent and he supports the prayer caravan. Superintendent Billy Coleman says he will be participating in the event as a private citizen. And he adds that this is not a school-sponsored function. But people with the Freedom from Religion Foundation say because the prayer caravan will go to each school in the system and pray, it is a violation of the Constitution. And they also point to the fact that at one time, the event had been announced on the school system's website. Governor Bentley says they are misinterpreting the First Amendment.
I personally believe that one of the problems we have in this country is taking God out of not only our lives, but out of government. And we're not, but we can't force that on someone. That's what the Constitution says. People have the right to express their opinion on their beliefs. And I do it all the time. Nobody's put me in jail yet.
Now, officials with the Freedom from Religion Foundation say they will have some of their people there in Coleman observing as the prayer caravan happens on Saturday. Reporting live in the Decatur newsroom, Jack Madison, WAFF 48.
And the prayer caravan did happen on August the 10th, and it was huge news. Here's just a small flavor of some of the news from WHNT and WAFF.
Despite opposition from the Freedom from Religion Foundation, the prayer caravan in Coleman County was a success.
The Bible teaches us greater is he that's in us than he that's in the world.
I was just amazed that everybody was praying for everybody at this school.
The prayer caravan didn't let backlash from the FFRF hold them down.
I'm thankful that they, so to speak, kicked a sleeping dog.
If you close your eyes, you'd think you were in a pew on Sunday morning. Heads bowed in prayer for the school whose grass the crowd stood on.
And we invite the Lord into our schools. Without that, we have nothing.
But the Freedom from Religion Foundation begs to differ, saying God, prayer, and religion in school is unconstitutional.
Alabama's motto is we dare defend our rights.
I've been praying for those that are against this, that they will somehow be touched.
The district passed a resolution making it clear they do not sanction the prayer caravan. But the fact that Superintendent Billy Coleman organized the event still leaves the FFRF unhappy.
So what you didn't excerpt there, Dan, was that Coleman kicked off the prayer caravan with a speech saying, quoting the Bible, pray without ceasing. And that's basically what we see public officials doing all over the country on their own time, fine, not as part of their official functions, and especially not in our public schools. It certainly did look and sound like a church service with ministers preaching and people praying and singing hymns.
Well, you could see them standing in front of the school with their eyes closed and their arms outstretched, kind of like a voodoo or a shamanistic curse on all those buildings.
And we are investigating all of these major violations in the Coleman schools, and we'll keep you posted on that.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is Free Thought Radio. Stay tuned for more news.
And for our interview with journalist and author Susan Jacoby, whose latest book is about the great agnostic.
Get off your knees and start thinking. The answers will be found right here on Earth. unbow your head and open your eyes. Get off your knees and get to work.
We've been talking about government prayer. Government officials should get off their knees and get to work. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylord.
And you'll hear more about that at our upcoming convention, our 36th annual convention in Madison, Wisconsin, on Friday, September 27th, ending on September 29th. It's about a little more than a month away. And if you're going to attend, you need to get your room reservations made now.
Yes, you can call the Concourse Hotel before August 29th to be sure you get the convention rate. And all the information, the schedule, the lineup is at ffrf.org. Look for events and convention, the links at the top, and there's plenty of information about our speakers. We open with Dan Savage and Julia Sweeney and Jill Sobule. We'll be doing the Jill and Julia show on Friday night. We have complimentary cake. We have our non-prayer breakfast the next morning. We have awardees such as Sarah Paretsky, the mystery writer, student activist Zach Kaplan. We have First Amendment winners, Ellery Shemp, celebrating his 50th anniversary of Abington versus Shemp, Jim McCollum. We have Arizona State Rep Juan Mendez, the one of the only atheists in the state legislature who's out. And speaking of Ellery Shemp,
This is the 50th anniversary of the Shemp decision, which happened in 1963. Ellery's going to talk about it. But back in 1963, I don't think people realize what huge news that was. It was headline news when that victory came down, the Shemp decision. For example,
what was that about?
About prayer in school.
What's
and Bible reading.
Recitation of the Lord's Prayer and Bible reading.
And so the Supreme Court ruled in Ellery Shemp's favor that that's unconstitutional. CBS News that year ran an hour-long story about the case, going into the history and interviewed all the major parties, including interviewing a very young Ellery Shemp.
Whom you will get to meet in person at our convention.
Eric Severide introduced South Carolina Senator Strom Thurmond, who complained vehemently about that decision.
Senator Strom Thurmond of South Carolina called the decision a conspiracy.
The Supreme Court's decision against the Lord's Prayer and Bible reading constitutes another major trial for the forces of secularism and atheism, which are bent on throwing God completely out of our national life. The pattern of this conspiracy to remove God from our national life, as Dr. Billy Graham has called it, is crystal clear. Already the Christmas tree is being attacked, as well as the singing of the national anthem, with its reference in the second stanza to the national motto, In God We Trust. All of this is being done in the name of freedom of religion. Actually, this is designed to ensure not freedom of religion, but freedom from religion.
Hear, hear. And that phrase that he used, pattern of conspiracy, was the paranoid way that they talked about communism, the threat of godless communism.
You think your mom saw that show when she was thinking about naming the Freedom From Religion Foundation? Strom Thurmond, you
well,
know.
Well, I mean, we knew that you can't have freedom of religion without the freedom to dissent, and that freedom from religion is part of the First Amendment. We wanted to remind people of that. I kind of doubt that he was the inspiration
for the name
of our group. We talked about it when I was a college student, and I don't remember his name coming up, Dan.
But that phrase was being talked about. You know,
I'm not going to give him any credit. And I thought we were going to hear from Ellery. But if you want to hear Ellery, you're going to have to come back. You're going to have to come to the convention.
Yeah, that CBS News. Well, we can play a little bit of that next week. The CBS News actually interviewed Ellery in his young 20s talking about that because he was a high school student, and then he went into college when the decision came down.
And we were looking at it. There's a copyright on it, but we were watching that on your computer, Dan. And he was so young and so articulate, and it was a real pleasure to see this black and white documentary from 1963 giving proper credence to the Supreme Court victory and freedom of conscience of students. And we're still fighting so much that battle that he and other Supreme Court victors have won. We have a constant battle for enforcement to keep religion and religious ritual and creationism out of the public schools.
Now, Strom Thurmond was maybe a little bit prophetic. He talked about the forces of atheism are taking over. Well, actually, that's kind of happening. Atheism and non-belief is growing and becoming stronger, and Of course, back then it was red-baiting to say that, the pattern of conspiracy and godless communism. But the country is growing up, and the forces of free thought are continuing. Who are we going to talk with after the break, Annie Laurie?
We are going to hear from Susan Jacoby, one of our favorite journalists, an author of many books, one on the history of free thought, and now she's got a new book, another history work, The Great Agnostic, Robert Ingersoll and American Free Thought. You read her columns around the country, including the Washington Post, and she's on the an honorary director of the Freedom from Religion Foundation. So stay tuned for Susan Jacoby.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And more than a century ago, there were people saying that, beware of dogma, in their own way and in their own time. The history of free thought, atheism, secularism, and dissent from the majority of religions is very long and very proud history. And one of the contributors to, and one of the actors in that history, is Susan Jacoby. She's the author of many books, I think at least eight books. She's a journalist. She authored a book called Wild Justice, which was a Pulitzer Prize finalist. She writes for the Washington Post, the New York Times, Newsday. She writes for Vogue and many other publications. And I think her most popular book, at least among us freethinkers, is the book called Freethinkers, which was and is a New York Times bestseller, Freethinkers, A History of American Secularism. And her newest book, which we talked about briefly last year, is about one of those historic freethinkers from the 19th century named Robert G. Ingersoll. The new book out of Yale University Press is called The Great Agnostic, Robert Ingersoll and American Freethought. So Susan, from New York City, welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Glad to be back on Free Thought Radio. I should say that the reason I wrote this rather short biography of Ingersoll was that after Freethinkers was published in 2004, it's a whole. And by the way, I'm not a journalist. I'm an intellectual historian. I started out as a journalist. I'm not a journalist anymore. When I wrote Freethinkers, there was a chapter about Robert Ingersoll and American free thought in the last quarter of the 19th century. And of course, it being a book that covered 200 years, I wasn't able to write everything about Ingersoll I wanted to. And a lot of people said they wanted to do more about him. So, you know, 8 years later, I got around to doing a short biography of him. And there really hadn't been any good biographies of him done for a long time. So that's why I did it, because readers of Freethinkers asked for more.
Well, thank you for doing that. And for those listeners who may not be familiar with The Great Agnostic, who haven't read that chapter in your book Freethinkers, I haven't read your book yet. Can you clue them in about Robert Greene Ingersoll and his important contributions?
Well, it's a lot of young people today. They think they're part of this new atheist movement, and they think, oh, there's older people who don't believe in God too.
Robert Ingersoll is not an older person who doesn't believe in God. He's an older person who's been dead since 1899.
Yeah.
But Robert Ingersoll was, first of all, he was the most famous orator in the last quarter of the 19th century in America. And that includes presidents. He spoke before more Americans than any other single person. And what he did was, he was someone who had strong political ambitions when he was young. He was a Republican. He was of the generation of Republicans who became Republicans because they were opposed to slavery during the Civil War, not like today's Republican Party. And it was generally agreed that had he not placed his anti-religious views and his campaign for separation of church and state, his views on evolution and reason, ahead of his political ambitions, he certainly could have and would have been a candidate for president of the United States. He was that famous. But once he decided that he was not going to mute his views about religion, that was all over for him, and he was also a lawyer, and he became better known as an orator, although he was involved in Republican politics his whole life as a backer of various other candidates, but he couldn't even be appointed to public office. He was talked about as a candidate for ambassador to Germany after German unification after 1870. But Republican presidents who owed a lot to him for campaigning for their election couldn't appoint him because of his views about religion. It was said he couldn't say "Mein Gott," which was one of the most common German exclamations at the time.
Well, he could have said "Gesundheit."
Yes,
instead
exactly.
of "God bless you."
Exactly, a ridiculous kind of thing. But what Ingersoll did and what his gift was is he was able to translate a lot of ideas into ways that could Ingersoll believe strongly that humanism and opposition to religion and atheism and agnosticism, which he did not distinguish between. He said the atheist is an agnostic and the agnostic is an atheist, because he often said he was called the great agnostic. That was the name he gave himself. But then as now, it was a newly invented word by Thomas Henry Huxley, because basically it sounded less in your face than atheist, which in fact was a much older word than agnostic, and went back in Greek to the pagan era. Atheists in the pagan era were called people who opposed the official gods of Rome and Greece at the time.
Yeah, the anti-Zeus crowd.
Yes, but Ingersoll always pointed out, and I try to point this out when I speak too, the atheist doesn't say, "I know there is no God," because you can't prove a negative. All the atheist says, which is exactly what the agnostic says, is based on the evidence I see around me, I don't think so. And I say that when I speak, and I actually stole this as a paraphrase from something Ingersoll said. I'm an atheist, but if you tell me that the people I love who've died, whom I've lost in the last decade, are all going to appear at dinner tonight and I can make them spaghetti and they show up, I'll revise my views. It is the religious person who says, "I know there is a God."
He likes
the atheist doesn't say, "I know there is no God."
He liked to eat spaghetti. He really loved his meals, didn't he?
Oh, Ingersoll, I don't know if spaghetti was one of his favorite things. It wasn't that common outside Italian immigrant communities in America at that time. But he was a big eater, a famous eater, as was indeed shown by his girth. One newspaper, actually it was the Oakland Evening Tribune, said that the size of his girth showed that if he were burned, he would make a spectacular auto da fe with all of the fat in his body.
Well, I think he had that one line. He said, "A good meal lost is gone forever."
Yes.
He liked his food and appreciated, reality, the things that really make life pleasant.
Yes, and the thing is he also... He was, in his own way, a great popularizer of science, precisely because he wasn't a scientist. He didn't believe, and he probably had more to do in America with translating Darwin's theory of evolution into ways that people could understand than Huxley, who was a scientist, did. He believed that you did not have to have a college education or then even a higher education to understand this. And, one of his most famous lines is he used humor. One of his standard lectures on evolution would open with, he would say that when he first read Darwin's On the Origin of Species, his first thought was how awful it would be for the nobility of the old world to know that they were descended not from other noble people, but from the Duke Orangutan and the Princess Chimpanzee. Well, this was humor that people could understand. It's still funny today, and nothing travels less well over time than humor. And he even talked in some of his very, very biting speeches that you could just to say, people would say, "Oh, the beautiful sunset. Oh, the beautiful animals. How could they have been created by anyone but God?" And Ingersoll said, "Oh, the beautiful cancer, as beautiful as a red, red rose. How could that have been created by anyone but God?" Making the point that nature was not only beautiful and awe-inspiring, but awe-inspiring in its in its indiscriminate horror as well as its beauty.
It's better to think nature doesn't care than it does. Otherwise, it's pretty cruel.
Of course, yeah. That's one of the things that Ingersoll would point out. It's that he was glad he wasn't religious, because religious people have to reconcile things like the death of a child with their idea of a benevolent, kind God. He's one of the things that that he said the agnostic never has to do is reconcile belief in a benevolent, all-powerful, all-loving God with the terrible things that happen around us every day. The only thing the religious person ever has to fall back upon is it's a mystery. God must have a plan. And Ingersoll said, well, if that's God's plan, I don't want anything to do with it.
Now, he was known as a great orator. I mean, he was an attorney and worked as an attorney and so on. But can you give us some idea of the scope of his travels, the kinds of audiences that he collected, you know, his celebrity?
He traveled to every state. I believe he spoke in every state except Alabama, Arkansas, and there's one other I can't remember.
Oh, and they needed him.
The states he didn't speak in were the states you could imagine where he might not have been invited to speak. There were just three he didn't speak in. That was one of the reasons for his influence, is he traveled at a time when most Americans, even wealthy Americans, did not. He traveled far more than presidents, who generally stayed pretty – presidents didn't travel during their term of office at that time. They stayed pretty close to the White House and wherever they spent their summer vacation. And when he would speak, he spoke a lot of times in places like Texas, which hard to believe, but Texas had large free thought communities, mm-hmm. many of them based on immigrants who came from Europe after the failed democratic revolutions
in Germany,
of 1848.
And, so, yeah.
And people would ride for hundreds of miles to hear him when he was speaking in places like Sherman, Texas. He did not only reach educated, intellectually elite audiences in cities. He reached out, you know, he appeared in small cities on the prairies. And so that he had the scope of his influence had to do with the scope of his travels. When Walt Whitman died in 1892, he also spoke extensively in Canada. He was actually on a speaking tour of Western Canada, and he hired a special train to bring him back to speak at Walt Whitman's funeral. He was famous for his funeral eulogies, which were secular eulogies, which were widely reprinted.
Well, we are famous for talking about Shakespeare and Burns as well, other things. And we are talking, I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker. We are talking with author Susan Jacoby about the great agnostic Robert Ingersoll and American Free Thought. And we'll be back in a few minutes to learn a little bit more about his importance and influence.
And her new book from Yale University Press, which is just out, called The Great Agnostic.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're continuing our talk with Susan Jacoby, the author of many books, including Free Thinkers, and her newest book about Robert G. Ingersoll called The Great Agnostic. Susan, I remember the first time I heard Ingersoll's name, 1983. I was still a preacher on my way out in a big Assembly of God church in San Jose. The minister got up in the pulpit and he held up the book, Some Mistakes of Moses by Robert G. Ingersoll, and he asked the audience, who's ever read this book? Nobody had. Then he held up the Bible and he said, who's ever read this book? And everybody cheered and he said, see, in his day, Ingersoll thought religion would die, but nobody remembers his book and everyone remembers the Bible. And I remember thinking, oh, but what did he say? What was in that book? He piqued my interest. I thought, that's not fair. He should at least say something about the wonderful way that Ingersoll wrote.
Actually, Some Mistakes of Moses, which made fun of the Old Testament, just the way he did of the New Testament, there's actually at the Ingersoll Birthplace Museum in Dresden, there's a copy of it that was translated into Yiddish for the benefit of secular immigrants on the Lower East Side. And I just want to say that one of the things that so ticked off ministers about Ingersoll and his generation, he was He was a man who was very much ahead of his time in many other ways, because he applied his secularism to issues then which are still issues today, to feminism. Before there was any means of birth control reliable, Ingersoll said that woman will never be truly free until she can decide for herself whether to have a child or not. And listen to this, how early, and not depend on the indulgence of one kind man for her security. That was an amazingly prescient thing, which in fact not all male freethinkers were concerned about this at all. I will give you another example of Ingersoll's being ahead of his time, which is one of the reasons that he's really my hero. Now, Ingersoll was a man of science, but he was completely opposed to vivisection, the cutting up of live animals to see how they reacted to pain. And he said that that he had consulted many scientists who said that there's nothing that you can learn that you can't learn from an autopsy on a dead animal. And here is Ingersoll writes this to a friend in 1891. This is 1891, 50 years before Dr. Mengele. Ingersoll says, "Vivisection is the Inquisition, the hell of science. We can excuse in part the crimes of passion. We can take into consideration the fact that man is liable to be caught by the whirlwind, and from a brain on fire, the soul rushes to a crime. But what excuse can ingenuity form for a man who deliberately, with an unaccelerated pulse, seeks with curious and cunning knives in the living, quivering flesh of a dog for all the throbbing nerves of pain? The wretches who commit these infamous crimes pretend that they are working for the good of man. But those who are incapable of pitying animals are, as a matter of fact, incapable of pitying men. A physician who would cut a living rabbit in pieces, laying bare the nerves, denuding them with knives, pulling them out with forceps, would not hesitate to try experiments with men and women for the gratification of his curiosity." This is who Ingersoll was. This is why he deserves to be a secular hero, because unlike Herbert Spencer and all those social Darwinists with whom he was friends in many instances, he saw right away that science, like anything else, can be used for evil as well as for good, which some of the people then who believed in science as a god did not see. That is why he is such an important and heroic figure in the history of secularism. To see what he saw about this in 1891, before it was proved to us by men who actually did it in the horrible 20th century, shows you what kind of a thinker he was.
And he was a friend of all of the major suffragists, the feminists, Elizabeth Cady Stanton.
Yes,
Susan B. Anthony.
Yes, absolutely.
But, and also a famous family man.
That was, you know, naturally the press tried to look for irregularities in his family life. But he was a famous family man. He absolutely was passionately in love with his wife. And he dedicates the first volume of his collected works to my wife, Eva M. Ingersoll, a woman without superstition, which was his highest praise, of course, for anybody.
And which is what I stole for the anthology I edited of 19th and 20th century women.
Yes.
I liked
yes,
that so much.
Great.
And then there was that story about Robert Ingersoll's son was seen drunk at the dinner table. And Ingersoll replied,
"Robert Ingersoll did not have a son."
Exactly. He replied, "We don't drink at the dinner table. And besides, I have no son." They were trying to find any way they could to get at him. So.
Well, Robert Ingersoll did drink wine.
Yeah. Well, he said that. I drink at the dinner table or something like that, he said. But,
that's
yeah,
very
he
funny.
Loved his food.
Well, and of course, when he died, his wife and sister-in-law and daughters were present. This was something, it was very important to him because, of course, every famous free thinker before him, like Thomas Paine and Voltaire, the religious would all say that they'd repented at the last minute and, you know, confessed their sins. And he wanted his death to be witnessed because he didn't want anybody to be able to say that about him. And it wasn't said about him either. There were rumors, but then his wife and daughters were able a few years later, since they had witnessed his death, to attest to the fact, and they even signed a legal document attesting to it that was notarized, that he did not repent and recant his atheism and agnosticism on his deathbed.
And he had heart trouble. He was only 66, and if he had been born a few generations earlier, they probably would have been able to save his life. But what a loss!
Yeah, of course, a lot of people died of things involved with you know clogging of the arteries that are just treated routinely today. But that is certainly why he died. He died of heart problems at the age of 66.
And there was such an
he had them for a long time.
There was such an outpouring of love and eulogies for him when he died from all the famous and feted people that he was friends with.
You know, I mean, everybody from Buster Keaton, Keaton, Elizabeth Cady Stanton. But there was also, I mean, there were he died on a Saturday, all of the newspapers had editorials about him the next day, and preachers were able to preach what they thought about him from the pulpit the next day.
Thank you, Susan. We're out of time. I'm sorry. This is fascinating. We're talking with Susan Jacoby, author of The Great Agnostic, Robert Ingersoll and American Free Thought. Also, thank you, Dave McCann, for producing the show. You can find out more about Free Thought Radio if you'll go to ffrf.org/news/radio.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org. We've got copies of the August issue of Free Thought Today, which is full of our student essays and winners and high schoolers and lots of other information. Phone 1-800-335-4021 or just join us and get 10 issues a year. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. Thank you.